With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody. I am Lucia Matuonto, and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Today, we are excited to chat with Stephen Joseph from New York City. Stephen is a storyteller, comedian, and author. In addition to his creative pursuits, Stephen brings a wealth of expertise to the table as an attorney, with negotiation being his forte. His latest book, Cranky Superpowers, has been generating quite a buzz lately. So, my dear Stephen, welcome to the RV.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure, and it's great that you do this, and it's just all amazing.
Thank you very much. It's great to have you back in the RV for the second time. I've been looking forward to interviewing you, and I really appreciate your time, Steve.
Well, thank you. So the first time you had me on, I wrote this book, A Grown-Up Guide to Effective Crankiness. And because I wanted to be on your show again, that's the only reason I wrote this book, Cranky Superpowers, just so I could be on your program again.
That sounds so wonderful. So you need to write a new book. I know you're
right. Yes. Well, actually, I'm coming out soon with another kid's book. So one of my Snoodles books. So just for those viewers, I've written, this is going to be my third Snoodles book. I have Snoodles, Cadoodles, Poodles, and lots of Noodles. Snoodles in Space, a Snoodle, the Zoodle Cadoodles, and One Happy Schmoodle. And now I'm coming out with Snoodles in Space, Episode 2, The Zoodles Strike Back.
So to start, can you share a bit about your upbringing in Brooklyn?
Well, I grew up in the Bronx, or not Brooklyn, it's the Bronx. Brooklyn, it's a little bit different than the Bronx, but it's one of the five boroughs. So, yes, I grew up in the Bronx, like in the 60s. I'm first generation American, and my mother was a Holocaust survivor, which kind of was brought up a lot growing up as a child. And I think because of that, I kind of like a caretaker personality, like to take care of people. So that's kind of what I do. But it was fun. It was just a fun time growing up. There's all kinds of different experiences. It's so different now than it was back then. So back then, kids would feel like me. We'd just go on the subway by ourselves. I look back. I did that when I was like 9 years old, just going off to a ball game, and. You know, I make fun, and I have a blog, and I talk about like going to Yankee Stadium for bat day. And I say it's like, you know, you think about now, you can't bring a bottle of water into a stadium. And back then, they just gave out 60 bat day. They give out 60,000 weapons, and half the people were drunk. So, wow. It was a little different back then, but it was fun growing up. And growing up in New York City, just teenage years, again, it was like, oh, like now compared now to back then, spent a summer going to Central Park concerts, where it's like you pay $3 to see like Every other day, all summer long, I would see Meatloaf, The Clash, Blondie, Talking Heads, just for $3. And that's for the orchestra seats. The general admission were $1.50, so I got the expensive seats. So it was just like amazing back then. Just a lot of fun growing up in New York City.
Wow, I can imagine. Actually, I had a dream since I was a kid. I want to visit New York because I was reading about it on the newspapers and on TV. But then when I was like on my 20s, I had the chance to fly to New York. And for me, it was unbelievable. I remember it was during Easter. And I just want to cry, Stephen, because, you know, that was everything that I dreamed about.
Wow.
And I'll be back. That's why I said Brooklyn, because I'm going back to New York soon. And Stephen, I'm your fan, you know, and I follow your adventures on social media. And I must say, the pictures you take while running in New York are absolutely stunning. But here's the burning question.
Okay.
What, Stephen, motivates you to put on running shoes and brave the freezing temperatures of the Big Apple?
Well, today I actually ran in the rain for like 2.5 hours. And in the story behind that, so when I was just like 1987, I was living in Pittsburgh. I was working in a law firm. I graduated law school from University of Pittsburgh back in 1986. And the thing is also growing up in my in the Bronx, my mother was a fabulous cook and made amazing food. So I learned how to cook. So instead of studying at night, being in law school at night, I would just like be cooking and eating and drinking, going to Squirrel Hill Cafe. I don't know if you lived in Pittsburgh. So yeah. Squirrel Cafe, they had Tuesday night was import night. And also Pittsburgh is like the big football town. So like Saturday watching football, drinking beer, eating pizza, potato chips, Sunday football again, you know, so just sitting with friends. And also like I blew up to like 240 pounds. That was like 40 waist. And in December 87, around Christmas Eve, my girlfriend dumped me. Then New Year's Day, my brand new car got stolen in front of my house, and then I got fired from my job. So I lost my girl, my car, my job within like 10 days. And I said to myself, you know what? No matter how tired I was going to go to the gym. And it started out very slow because I said, like, I need to like work out. I had never done this before. So they put me on a Life Cycle, which back then it wasn't like elliptical machines. It was a Life Cycle, like a bicycle that moved, that was a stationary bike. And they put me on level one, the easiest level. And they said, we'll try you out for 3 minutes. And it would be 3 minutes. Oh, God, like, oh, God, I can't do this. Oh, I'm going to get a heart attack. And I did make it. But and then I just cut out different things of fried foods, potato chips, all that stuff that was killing me. And I was down to, by June of 88, I was down to 155. So I went from 40 waist to 32 waist. And all of a sudden, I was able to start running. And a year later, I ran my first marathon was the Jersey Waterfront Marathon. And then I did the Marine Corps Marathon. And I just kept running, but I didn't do marathons. So 2001, this was right after 9/11, I got into the New York City Marathon. And I'm 40 then. So it's like, okay, I was training for like a year and a half for that. And I did that, and I was a mess after. It was like 4 hours and 21 minutes, and I was like shivering, and like it was like after that race, I was like sore for days, and in like, you know, at that night, you know, you turn on the heat, you throw three blankets on top of me, I'm still shivering. And for some reason I said, you know, I'm going to keep doing this. And this year I signed up, I'm going to be running my 20th New York City Marathon. And the best moment was a little over 10 years ago. When I turned 50, I did my fastest time. I did 3:17 in the New York City Marathon. And that was like amazing for me because it's just like out of body experience when you're hitting mile 26 and you're flying. And a 3:17 is like, there's 50,000 people running. And I finished about like 2,900 out of 50,000. So like I was like thinking back then, by the time I turn 80, I'll be running with the Kenyans. Of course, it's a little hard.
That's amazing because you came from 0 to 100.
Yes.
And it's not easy. It's so difficult to start. I think starting is the worst thing. I don't know if you agree, but for example, I had stopped the working out during the pandemic the pandemic. And I restarted like 1 year ago, but I was always postponing. I feel tired, I'm lazy, or I have more things to do. And then now I'm being more active and I basically exercise every day. But this almost 2 years that I stopped during the pandemic, I had no inspiration to go back. So your story, you are an example of someone who really wanted to change.
And the thing, I love talking about this, and I write about this in my book, and this happened, you know, I always think about, like, what did I do? Because I wasn't planning on losing 85 pounds. It wasn't the plan. And then when my daughter was small, I noticed I started gaining weight. And I noticed also the reason I was becoming my daughter's garbage can, where, you know, she's not eating that chicken McNugget or chicken nuggets. I didn't like McNuggets, but... And I was just like, oh, I'll eat it, or the slice of pizza. I was the garbage can. And then I decided I'm not going to be the garbage can. So I started even writing back then about, like, how did I do this? And I realized, you know, and this is what I like talking about. People always talking about finding good habits or creating good habits, you know, like getting rid of those bad habits. And I talk about, I like the word normals better than habits. Like, so I compare, like, habit is like you find a good parking spot and, wow, that's a great park right in front of the house. And, but still it's temporary. You're going to move the car at some point, you know? So in normals is like building a house where there's more permanent, it's permanence to it. So I run because, like, that's my normal now. This is what I normally do. So this morning, the alarm went off and I said, really? The alarm? Wait a second. It's only two. It's not. And I have to get, and I get up, but I wanted to stay in bed really badly. So, but this is what I do. I'll get up. And sure enough, you know, I know that as groggy and like how much I wanted to stay in bed, like 10 minutes later, I'll be okay.
Tomorrow, I'll go to my spinning class at 7 o'clock. Okay, I'm motivated now. So, Stephen, let's talk about crankiness. How did you become an expert on this subject?
I'm a lawyer, and I manage other lawyers, And you know, there's a difference when you're young and you're doing this stuff. It's like you're learning, and now it's like everyone else is young, and I'm managing other lawyers. And I say, and I write in my book, you know, to understand lawyers, I describe it in a funny way. I say, like, the first year of law school, they teach us how to get on people's nerves. And then the second year of law school, they teach us how to rub people the wrong way. And in the third year of law school, they teach us how to get underneath people's skin. And then when you get out, you can do all three things at the same time. And when you do that, you're a lawyer. So I actually surround myself because I'm a lawyer and I manage other lawyers. That's who I work with all day, those people who do all those things. And that gets me cranky. So there's always that kind of thing where, you know, I'm in the profession, the work picks me, I don't pick the work. So it's, you know, you plan on doing one thing and then there's 10 other things that take over. And I describe my job is like I run a bakery, and there's like, you know, you go into the bakery and you take a number. And I'm running a bakery and my number machine is broken. Everybody gets a one. I'm next. I got a one. I got the one. Yeah. So that's what I deal with all day. And all that, I get sometimes a little cranky. So I guess I had to think about it started out being effectively cranky and then coming up with stories about crankiness and just looking back on my life, those moments of crankiness that I actually experienced growth. And that's where like the cranky superpowers comes from. So like, you know, hey, I was, you know, I lost my girl, my job and my car and I got cranky. So that created change, you know, that sort of thing. So I've had different moments in my life like that where, okay, you know, I have to, you know, you get knocked down, you get up and you discover things that in you that you didn't know was there.
Mm-hmm.
So
I read your latest book, Cranky Superpowers. If you could have any superpower, not the cranky one, but another superpower, which one would you choose?
A superpower. So it depends on what you call a superpower. I think a superpower to like help people see things, to help like, you know, just change the world for the better. You know, that would be a really neat superpower.
Yeah.
So, and that is like the underlying message in my kid books that, you know, these kids and the adults, they all find in themselves like their superpower that helps change things for the better. So in my first book, the Snoodles, Cadoodles, Poodles, and lots of noodles. There's this character who creates a Snoodle, which runs on noodles. And, you know, like it replaced a Krautmobile, which ran on sauerkraut and got people really cranky. So that was just to be able to create that and that make everybody happy and they're driving in their Snoodle and you just go to the Ramenoleum and you fill up your Snoodle with noodles. And then you get home and you just press a button, you get a big bowl of noodles. And that's like really great. So I think that would be like a superpower that mm-hmm. just be able to make people see like, wow, I could do that and help other people. I was just amazed. My illustrator, he has like a lot of superpowers. Not only is he's an amazing illustrator, but he's like he sings and writes and like this great music where when it's one of those things where you first hear this, like, oh, he has a song, you haven't heard anything yet. I'm thinking like probably won't be bad, but don't quit your day job sort of thing. And I'm listening to this, it's like, why are you doing with your day job? It's just incredible. And he has a song which we're going to be using in my next book, merging the Snools book with music. So the next book after this book is not even out yet, Snoodles in Space, Episode 2, The Zoodles Strike Back. The next book will be Snoodles in Space, Escape from Zoodletraz. And in that book, the beginning is like almost like I have to retell the story in a way. So how I'm doing that is like the mayor having the state of the city kind of speech and talking about our heroes of Noodleham. And then I introduced the big music scene in Noodleham, and it started by Andy Dandy, and he has a folkadoodle factory, and then there's the Swifty Swoodle and the Wappadoodles. So I have these characters, but then he has a song, Life on Earth, which in Life on Earth, like just the words fit perfectly into the message of that book and all my books, where like, do you dare to really live? There's a, like he sings about a million moments every day there for free. And are we here just to merely exist, but just to live, to really experience, to change, to like you, we have an opportunity. And I was like, wow. So, and there's a female singer, there's a chorus, there's him singing. And it's like, this is a single. It's not like just a good, it's like, wow. So I have this picture in my head where all my characters, so I have Andy Dandy, I have Swifty Swoodle and the Doo-Wop-a-Doodles all singing in the song. And it's like, and that's going to be like aside from the book, like you get the book and you get the song. And then again, we're talking about superpowers, but that to me is incredible.
So, but it will be like an audio book.
No, I'm trying to figure that out, how we're going to do that, because and the other thing about that book, which hasn't even been, he's probably working on it, but hasn't been drawn up yet, is that, and I had this idea of, because we're talking about the heroes in Noodleham, that, and it's this big celebration. That's how the book starts out. So I go, Andy, I have this idea about you drawing up almost like a parade, like something like the Macy's Day, Thanksgiving Day parade. And all our characters will be up in the sky, these big, huge balloons as part of the parade. And I said, Andy, you know, that's my dream, that our characters ultimately will be up in the sky in the Thanksgiving Day parade. So we might as well put it in the book first before we try to make this dream come true. And I would love to have, like, the day before we blow up the balloons, you know, these giant balloons, which will be a superpower in itself, because those are big balloons. So I don't know exactly, but really, when you're getting into four books, and the amazing thing about Andy is that he's writing backstory. He's drawing more stuff that I don't even see. So he told me, I was in Nottingham visiting him, and he told me about J.K. Rowling, how she like plotted out, like, you know, she has all these seven books, and then she's writing all the characters and backstories and backstories and backstories that you don't even see in the book. So even though my stories are just like some kind of brain fart that's coming out of my head and I just write it down, he's like drawing up things about these characters and drawing things. And he's saying like, oh, like we have to do a story about this. I've drawn up so much stuff about this character. It's a whole, it's like there's two worlds. There's this planet Zoodle, there's planet Earth, there's all these kind of vehicles that every book has a new vehicle. And, you know, there's the Crapmobile, there's the Snoodle. In the next book, it's the Grudel, which actually was before the Crapmobile and runs on gruel, which is really, really stinky. And there's, every book has a new poodle. So in this coming book, there's Droodle the Poodle, which very droolish, you know, drooling. And the next book will be Floodle the Poodle, who plays the flute. And then there's another car, and there's also a museum. Every book has a museum. So, or some kind of like event place. So this coming book, there's going to be this aquarium water park. The prior book was a space exploration museum. The prior book was an art museum. So just, again, creating this world and these characters, every character is making the world a better place. So, that's what we're thinking. How do we just take it out of the book and put it somewhere else? So at the very least, we like at least now we're thinking like the QRC code, you get the book and then you get the video. And but want to do a lot more with that. Mm-hmm. Don't know where it goes, but ultimately we want to parade. That's what we want.
Mm-hmm. And I think you get most of your inspiration, let's say, stories when you are running, maybe?
Yes. So I actually, I say I write my run and I get like some idea in my head. And then I get like, and I attach other things to it. And then maybe the best is like I get a character or a bunch of characters and they're all talking to me. And I'm just watching. I'm just letting them go. And in this book, there's Cinderella Crankosaurus. There's the prince and there's the king and the queen, which are like my parents. You know, it's just like hear my parents talking. So the prince was turned into a frog, but he saw and he was eating flies because that's what frogs do. And there's a fly on Snow White's mouth. And Snow White was asleep because of this evil witch, whatever. And so he goes to eat the fly, but it's like a kiss. And Snow White wakes up. They start dating. And Snow White, do you know she was living with seven little men? You know, so he had a problem with that. And he would call them dwarves. He goes, no, they're not dwarves. They're cute little men. And finally, they broke up. And he was brooding in the castle. And the prince's parents, the king and queen, wanted to get back together with Snow White. And like the queen, she goes, a prince who used to be a frog can't be so picky. And I'm hearing my mother saying that, you know, just, and she actually came out with this movie, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And she goes, I even got the album, Snow White has a beautiful voice, you know. So again, it's like I'm not doing anything. I'm just listening to my parents being king and queen in this weird Cinderella story. So it's a lot of fun doing that. And I get, oh wow, I get that. So and then there was another one. It's great. Even the next book, Snoodles in Space, Episode 2, The Zoodles Strike Back. It was very easy to write once I had the light bulb, like one idea. So that book takes Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and turns it upside down. So in just thinking, it was something like I was watching Charlie and Chocolate Factory or whatever I was watching. And in that story with Willy Wonka, these kids are going to the factory. No one's ever been to the factory before. And it's a media circus, a media frenzy. Everybody's is there, like the TV crews and the newspapers. And I was thinking, you know, in the movie, in the story, Charlie is a nice boy and he gets to the factory and, you know, well, and all these kids, bad kids, spoiled, rotten kids, they get their due, whatever, they don't turn out so well. And I was thinking, well, that's terrible, because I was just imagining the media frenzy, how they probably reported how these kids turned blue and this and that. So I said, well, how about if I make them heroes? And I love redemption. I love that. So in this book, you have Frimpy Frumpy Froodle. he has a fitsy witsy pop-a-doodle. First he fitsed, and then he witsed, and then he went pop. And his sister, Wimpy Winy Woodle, has had a swizzly twizzly slime-a-doodle. So first she swizzled, and then she twizzled, and then she turned into a bucket of slime. So, of course, you know, it's in the newspapers, really slimy and whatever. And the kids would make fun of them, Froodle Pop-a-Doodle or Woodle Slime-a-Doodle, you know, just really, really bad. And but then they get to become heroes at the end because they overhear this plot to turn everybody into willy-nilly noodles and dilly-dally doodles. So they help overturn the plot and help clean the rivers and oceans and lakes. And of course, that's why we have the aquarium at the end.
So you create all these words. And how can Andy get on your thoughts?
So that's the greatest thing, you know, just in terms of the collaboration. And it's incredible. I was thinking, just like, you know, the book coming out is my fourth book with Andy, and now he's working on the fifth book. And so, like, just even this morning, because I'm going to be talking with you today, I'm thinking about this. And I was just thinking, like, the first book is like 30 something pages. And the next book is another 38 pages, whatever. And the next book is like 62 pages. And this book is like 64 pages. And the next book is going to be another 64 pages. And I'm doing the math. That's like 250, 60 pages of illustrations. It's like incredible. Like me, it's like I just have a story, write it down. So I write a story. And it's just a story, and I put up like a blog on my website, and then I have to do the story blocks, and I describe what I'm looking for in that he could draw, and once in a while, like during the process, I have what about this? So I make a suggestion, and he sends me pictures along the way. So this book that's coming out now. I had written last May, and already in the summer, I'm getting different pictures ongoing. And then in the fall, it's going faster and faster. And then by October, November, it's like, oh, we have a book. And I just like my breath gets taken away. And it's like Christmas every other week, every day. When you're thinking about 200 plus pages, and each page has different numbers of illustrations, it's not that, you know, you take 260 pages and there might be three or four illustrations, just get like 800, 900 illustrations. And it's incredible. It's just incredible that I have this person. So,
yeah, you're lucky.
I'm lucky. And I was on this podcast with other children's authors and publishers, and they talk about like with the mainstream way of doing books is that the author never even knows the publisher. I mean, the illustrator never communicates with the illustrator, never sees the illustrator. They keep it just very separate, like a Chinese wall that you never. And this is the greatest. I mean, might work, but the collaboration is like so awesome. There's nothing better than that. He writes me he calls me brother. You know, just like to have someone, and I'll call him a brother too. It's just to have that. It's like being in the middle of a buddy movie, and I love buddy movies. And like I'm in this fabulous buddy movie, and we're right in the middle, and I don't know where it's going to end, but I just don't want it to end. So it's so much fun.
Stephen, being an attorney, marathon runner, author, writer, comedian, you have a daughter. How do you effectively manage your time and juggle all these different roles?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know. The one thing, being older, my daughter is 28, so she's living elsewhere. And, I would go running in the morning, so that helps. And then on weekends is just when I write. So I have that opportunity. And once I have a few ideas in my head, and I'm running every day, and then things add on and add on. And then a lot of times what happens is that work just gives me stuff to write about. I was at a mediation, and which I do a lot, and the mediator comes into the room, says what the other side was saying, whatever, and we're all like getting on the mediator's case. He goes, "Don't shoot me, I'm just a messenger." So of course that was an opportunity. I get, you shoot the messenger, can't crank a source. And at first I started writing that thinking, yeah, it's not fair, we shouldn't shoot the messenger. But after thinking about it a while, I said, you know what, let's go ahead and shoot the messenger. And the reason that I said shoot the messenger, here's a guy charging $500 an hour. When I was in high school, I was a messenger, and I got paid minimum wage. If I need a messenger, I don't need to pay this person so much money. He should do a little bit more than just be a messenger. So let's go ahead and shoot him. So, stuff like that. I had another mediation where the mediator says, you could argue till the cows come home. So then I have cows come home cranket service that I had, like, and I have this character who already bought a chicken farm that had no chickens, because the chickens all cross the road to get to the other side because the grass is always greener on the other side. And then his wife was bothering him, and he always would say, the chickens will come home to roost. And you could argue till the cows come home. And so now he has this problem. Now the cows have to come home too. So it, like, one thing after another thing after another thing. And the funny thing about that, like, he gets a cow from the person who sold him the chicken farm. It's a scrawny cow. And his wife says, you know what, this cow is a lousy cow. Why don't you go sell the cow at the market? And he ends up trading the cow for seeds, which makes the grass greener. And the cow and the chickens do come home to roost. And the cows even come home. So, like, he look the chicken. And the wife says, like, what a dummy. You know, like, do you hear about our neighbor's son, Jack? He sold his cow for some beans, and he got the goose that laid the golden egg, you know. Yeah, so I said, well, sometimes you just can't win. But it was just funny, like, one thing after another thing after another thing, and it becomes a story.
So basically, during your work time, you listen to so many stories that you can start brainstorming.
Yes, it's brainstorming, and I love turning things upside down. So worth looking at things in a different way. And then what fun can I have with that? So even like I was making a salad, and I open up a bag. You know, like it's very just funny, like little dumb things. I don't know how it is in Spain, but you could get a salad, and it's, you know, a lot of these bags of salad, a bag of kale, and it says triple washed. I don't know, like all these salads, triple washed. And so I'm questioning, why do they have to wash it three times? You know, there's this big problem with water, that we don't have enough water on this planet. And I'm having a salad. You know what? Let's wash it three. I don't, when I do my laundry, I don't wash my laundry three times.
No, I think it's just they want to, you know, sell. And then they say, this is super clean. It was washed
three times. Yes. You know what? This other lettuce only washed twice. Not going to buy it. Yeah, forget that. I need three times washed lettuce. Yeah. So, I mean, stuff like that.
Yes. And Stephen, what message do you hope your readers will take away from your books? Let's say Cranky's Superpowers, for example, especially in terms of their potential to bring about personal transformation.
Yeah, that's the word. I'm so grateful for when, I read reviews on Amazon, and I'm up to like 213. And what's different about this book, I'm really grateful for, is, you know, you could get a 5-star review and somebody could write, nice book, yeah, whatever. And they're not, do they really read the book, or do they, in the reviews and for this, they really write like 3-4 paragraphs about their experience with the book. And one of the words, again, it's a little very grateful for, well, I'm feeling great gratitude, is that they write the word transformation or transformative. So with the book, reading all these different experiences that, and I call it the common Crankosaurus, because, you know, I compare it to the common cold where you have one or two in the year, you could have two or three in the morning alone, but looking at that as opportunities and slowing down and also having empathy for yourself and for others. So that's the message. I hope people getting it.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you that maybe our listeners are curious about. I know you are cranky and zen at the same time. So is that possible?
Yes. Again, that's the whole point is again, it's all about slowing things down. So in the beginning of the book, I talk about my ex-wife. She had ALS, she passed away. I gave the eulogy at her funeral. And she was an amazing person. And I talk about, and she was the one actually going into the Zen part. She was the one who got me going to the village Zendo and sitting on the cushion and doing these weekly silent retreats, like the end of the year from Christmas 26th through New Year's, like us just being sitting in silence. So you're eating with people, you're not talking. In the summer, we go out in New York's upstate New York. And again, like waking up like 4:45 in the morning, getting on the cushion at 5:30, sitting on the cushion. And you do these, we have breaks, but it's essentially sitting from 5:30 in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. And doing it again the next day, and you're not talking to anybody, and watching things slow down for me. So that was, again, you get cranky, but then you slow it down, and then you could feel it, you could touch it, and you could be more effective with it. So in not acting out. So, and I grew up in a house, my father, whatever was in his head came out of his mouth right away. There was no filter. It just came out of his mouth. And that's not really good. I have stories I should not tell and I won't tell, but yeah, that was my father. So my father was cranky, was very cranky, and but not effectively cranky. So having those experiences really helped. And again, getting back to the message in the book and talking about my ex-wife, and I said in the eulogy, she passed away around Passover, where it's like where the Jewish people were freed from slavery, left Egypt. And I talk about, you know, it's always not about freedom from, like freed from slavery, it's about freedom to. And she was this freedom to person. So, and she did a lot of, she grew up with arthritis, but she was a therapist. She was also a dancer. We were one day we're vacationing in Vieques, and she's working in Puerto Rico. That's where Vieques is, beautiful place. And she decided, you know what? I'm going to make films. I'm going to be a filmmaker. And I had to go, well, we don't own a camera. Well, I'll buy a camera. Well, you never made any. She taught herself how to make movies. You know, that was the kind of person she was. So again, it's that freedom too, that she was a great dancer, she was a great filmmaker, and did all those things where, you know, that's what she was about. So, and again, to me, that's you know, the message of transformation.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for your loss, Stephen, and she sounds like she was an amazing woman.
She was. She was cranky too.
And the last question for you, you know, with this the increasing demands of the world today, it's challenging to maintain a rational attitude towards our problems. So what strategies do you recommend for managing emotions and improving communication with others?
I think improving communications with others. So in my first book, I have Crankosaurus Doctor, where we, like, if our partners, I know I could diagnose that crankiness, give it space, give it permission. I talk about Crankosaurus Kryptonite, where we all have our kryptonite. And I talk about how, like, Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen say, you know what, that Superman has that kryptonite issue. Let's find another superhero. In this book, I have a chapter called Crankosaurus Menopause. And I say, like, in my relationship, we have a rule where you get to be 20% crazy, 5% insane, but you have to be 75% normal. And, you know, you might do the math, like 20% crazy at 365. That's 73 days a year of craziness. I don't know if I can handle that. And I say it's counterintuitive, because if I gave you 0% crazy, Lucia, you're not allowed to be crazy, 0% crazy, because when you do become crazy, and everybody does become crazy, because you're only allowed 0%, you have to say, I'm not the one who's crazy. You're the one who's crazy.
Exactly.
And that kind of makes me crazy, because I don't like being told I'm crazy by a crazy person. So then we get into this big, crazy, insane fight. And by giving you permission to be crazy once in a while, you know, you have 20%, you know, like that, like, there's appreciation. Wow, I get to be crazy. And from my standpoint, you know, she's only using 2%. It's not a big deal. She's allowed. Yeah, so. And then because of that, we only end up using maybe 1 or 2% a year. But if we didn't give ourselves permission, we could be 50-60% crazy, mm-hmm. and or even go insane. So, you know, so
like the idea of 25% craziness or being crazy a month. Maybe 25%, it could be like 10 days a month being a little bit crazy.
It's, well, 25%, that's a lot of crazy. You know, I'm saying this, you know, again, to make it count, you don't want to use it all up. Hopefully, you know, but again, by giving permission, by giving permission, there's empathy, there's appreciation, there's trust. You might be like, trust that there's the 75% normal there, and you're allowed to have that day. You know, I'm not going to, just get all upset, or you're not going to get all upset. And actually, by giving that permission, by giving that trust, it creates more trust. And I don't feel like I have to behave, you know, sort of thing. Like, I could let it out, or I might have to say, look, you know, I'm going to go in another room. What's just, again, how to manage it in an effective way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was always, from my family and all my family, I was always the one waking up in the morning and dancing before having breakfast, always talking a lot. And people used to say, she's crazy. And, you know, it's a good way to be crazy. And
yeah, that's a fun way to be crazy. I go running, I sing and dance when I run. So skip.
Yes. So, Stephen, where we can find you and, of course, your books?
You go to stephenjosephauthor.com, and that has all my books. That has my award-winning blog where I talk about crankiness and whatever comes to my mind, mostly crankiness. That's there. And you can find my books, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, all those different places that people get books, Target, Walmart, so all those places.
Sounds great. And for our listeners, first, I would like to say thank you very much for listening to our interview. And I'm proud to tell you that Stephen Joseph is our cover star in April. So please grab your free magazine at www.relatable-media.com and you'll be learning more about Stephen, about his books, and of course you'll see also Andy Kay's. So don't forget www.relatable-media.com. And Stephen, you know that the RV doors are always open for you, and I'll be always, always happy to come back to New York.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Lucia.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening, and remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.